Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker, Danette.
Did you want that money in the bank?
Would you please? All right. My name's Danette. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. Thank you, Rosanna, for that fabulous lead and that great example of what a program of recovery looks like. I really continue to expand and grow as I listen to other people share their experience working this program. I think it's important to say that what I share from this podium is my experience, and that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in our literature. I hope that I'm, you know, referring to it and using it to guide my recovery, because as it was said earlier, my head on my own is out to get me. And I don't really want to rely on that source that got me drunk for so long to guide my recovery. So now I'm at that point. Where do I start? Where did I start? Okay. Yeah, I wrote myself some notes, but I don't have my glasses with me. Because I wanted to... Oh, thank you, Trudy. Oh, those are perfect. So I think when I read in our literature... That tells me that the way we help other alcoholics is by telling you what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And what I used to be like, and still am at a great level, is a fun-loving person who likes to go places and do things and, you know, and run my life. I like to be in charge of what's going on, because then I feel like I can manage it. I didn't drink till later in life. I was about 17, and I moved to, I was about 17, and I moved to live with my grandparents and discovered alcohol. And very much that experience of this tightness and dis-ease and uncomfort that I'd felt all my life evaporated. And immediately I felt this incredible, I mean, it wasn't a beverage. It was a magic carpet ride. I felt like I had become part of the universe. I mean, I had just reached out and touched the stars. I mean, I can still remember that first magical experience of where alcohol took me. And for the rest of my drinking career, I continued to hope that I would once again find that place of euphoria that alcohol provided. I think that I started right away realizing that alcohol did something for me that I needed done, and that it fixed things in me that I had no idea how to fix for myself. We have a lot of common threads as alcoholics, I believe. You know, we do absurd, incredibly tragic things in our drinking. And some of, and then sometimes we have all these great, wonderful experiences. I started blacking out pretty early from the drinking. And I remember an experience driving from Colorado Springs, where I was living, to this little town in Windsor to visit my girlfriend. And it was snowing. And I'm driving down the road, and I remember picking up a hitchhiker because, you know, that's just a great way to travel with somebody else. And I was drinking schnapps and hot chocolate or something to that effect. And pretty soon we're going along, and this guy says, "Look, why don't you let me drive?" Well, nobody drives my car but me, be clear about that. And he's like, "Well, well, maybe you'd like some coffee. I'm like, no, I don't drink coffee. So how about some hot chocolate? So we stop at this truck stop, and I remember sitting in that booth, and we're going to have this hot drink, and then pretty soon I realize that my hitchhiker has left me. And I'm sitting there sobbing because I am now alone, you know, because the guy doesn't want to drive behind the wheel with a drunk woman, and or me behind the wheel. And those kinds of experiences and trying to piece together what happened through the next hours and finding this little town in Windsor. And then I remember, like, getting up the steps to this convenience store, and I'm leaning on the payphone. Looks like most of us might know what a payphone is. And I'm like this, and I've got my money in there. And I had this revelation. It didn't stop me from drinking, but the way the people looked at me that were running that convenience store as I'm trying to hold up myself by the phone and get directions to my friend's house. And, you know, that's insanity. The other part was, I remember all a good portion of that night thinking you should not sleep on a waterbed when you've been drinking, but not able to put the two together close enough to get the hell off the waterbed. And that was not a good experience. As I continued drinking, it became imperative for me to drink throughout the day. And I hung on to a job for all I was worth because it meant I was able to take care of myself. And I didn't want to hope that someone else was going to do that, that someone else was going to get me loaded, you know, what I needed. And I can remember driving into work after I moved to California and stopping on my way into that little office job to get some booze at Alpha Beta. And I didn't have any money, so I had to steal the booze so that I could drink it while I was at work and hope that I got to work and didn't get caught, you know, shoplifting this booze. And I wanted to be a good employee, I really did, but more than anything, I needed to drink. I would show up for work. I would be there drunk, hungover, still drunk from the night before, but I would be there most of the time. And I just had this fierce belief that if I took care of myself, I wasn't going to be disappointed. And I hung on to that for all I was worth. So, you know, I was at that point where I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I don't even know how I heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, but somewhere I had, and I told my friend I was going to go check it out. And I remember going to a meeting over on Santa Fe Street and walking in there and not wanting to be there. And just looking around, you know, like, what? I didn't know what it was. I don't even know how I heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when people started talking about their big book, I had all this judgment, and it was lining back up to this religion I'd been brought up in, and I thought, they think they've got their own Bible here, and they're holding hands and saying prayers. And I remember somebody was mouthing the words along with the How It Works, and I'm like, oh, it's a chant. And, you know, I couldn't wait to get out. And it was some time later that I had gotten in so much trouble at my employment. And remember, it's important for me to have a job, that I'd been demoted and I'd gotten, you know, disciplinary action, and I deserved to be fired. It was a union job, though, so they had to, like, compile all this evidence about how unfit I was for my line of work. And I kept showing up, and oh, the insanity of leaving on my coffee break to go drink, and then going at lunch and having some more, and trying to hold it together till I could get off work and buy something before I drove home, which was a, you know, whopping 3 miles. And that's how I was good to myself, was I didn't go without. And, you know, I got a drunk driving, and I started getting all these consequences, and more, I'm paying the piper, and less I'm getting the benefit. And what I want is to again experience that magic that alcohol does for me when it's working. And less it's working, and more the consequences. That's a desperate place. And I'm trying to get them off my back, and I'm trying to keep up a face, and I'm taking care of stuff, and I'm just putting everything I got into holding on, you know. And I, you know, it's gone like 2 years like this, and I'm fighting with everything I got. And one more time, I'm in the boss's office, and she's like, you know, I'd like to help you. She didn't want to help me. She hated me. But she said, I'd like to help you, and I just don't know what's wrong. And, you know, you seem fairly intelligent, and here is this mass of things you've done to make our company look really bad because I was not sober as I'm performing my work. And I told her, I said, you know, sometimes I drink too much. I just was up against that rock in the hard place. And what ended up happening was she got on the phone and found out, you know, what was available to me. And I went off to a recovery home here in Visalia. And it was Pine Recovery. And I spent some time there. That used to be co-ed. And I was taken to meetings, and I didn't want to go. And I remember just having meltdowns all the time, you know, because this thing that had kept me calm, it kept me going, I was no longer drinking. I wasn't. And, you know, what happened for me, you know, and you can know this is years and months, and so, like, you know, the surface stuff that, or some of it's deep, but it's, you know, a minuet. I was up at this lake meeting up at Kahwea Lake at the second boat ramp. And I remember laying there on the blanket as the meeting was going on, and I'm looking up at the stars, and I'm in this recovery home, and my life's a freaking mess. And I said, you know what? I want more for my life. I want more than I've got. And that was my spiritual awakening. That was me seeing where I was at. Until then, I'd just been like, I'm going to manage it. I'm going to get it on track. I'm going to power through it. I have a lot of self-will. And when I realized I wanted more for my life, the smallest of changes crept in. And I became a little bit willing to consider someone else's way, just a little bit. So that was a beginning. But what happened for the next 5 years is that I was running around like a wild woman trying to fix my trying to fix myself and not drink. Pardon me. And so I'm going to 5 different 12-step programs, because there's a 12-step program for everything. And I'm driving to Fresno for one, and I'm going to this fellowship and that fellowship. And I don't know, you know, you can't hear till you can hear, but I'm not doing the steps. I don't have the solution. I've just got a lot of information, and I'm chasing it down. And what happened was that I met a woman at one of these other 12-step programs, and when I finally got desperate enough, because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, stone cold sober, not drinking, not having a solution for my life. And when I reached out to her, she asked me how my program in Alcoholics Anonymous was. And I said, well, I've been sober for 5 years. I'm waiting for the applause. I said, and, you know, I go to meetings and I have, you know, sometimes I do this, sometimes I do that. And she said, have you ever worked a thorough set of steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, I love AA. Without AA, I'd be dead. But, you know, where I really need help is with my relationships. She wasn't hearing me. And she said, you know, I believe if you work a thorough set of steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will affect all areas of your life. And I said, well, I've been affecting these areas of my life. I've been going to, you know, this program and that program and the other one. I said, but where I need help is with him, with my relationship. She said, I believe if you work a thorough set of steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will affect all areas of your life. I'm so glad she said it the second time. It got through. I heard her. I knew I hadn't worked the steps. She offered to help me through that process. And this lady that I'd met, she lived in Montana, and I called her every week for an hour, and we worked through the steps as they're outlined in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the Big Book. That process was, oh, it was a myriad of things. It was exciting. It was uncomfortable. It was a process by which, after all that years of not drinking, I became convinced to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And on that bedrock, I could build. I could move up from that. And as I went through the steps with Heather, I found that transformation that our book talks about. I became a woman who did not need to drink. And when I got here, it was like the only thing that fixed me. Working through those steps, I can remember she, you know, we get to that point where it says, to the effect, if sex is extremely troublesome, we work the harder with other alcoholics and we find someone to whom we can, you know. So she took that as relationships, and I've always had trouble with relationships. And so there I was, sponsoring 8 women, meeting with them for an hour each a week, and working through the steps with them and hanging on to my job and trying to keep everything else going. I felt like I had plates spinning in the air like a juggler. But staying to the program and working through those steps definitely saved my life and offered me a new way of looking at life as it came at me. I became less, less and less interested in ourselves and our little designs. That continues to happen. You know, I still want what I want. I'm a human being, and that's been a challenge for me, too. I want to, you know, like be able to get this program, read it, plug it in, and then that's that. And coming to accept, you know, that I'm going to have a process as I move through this life is not not really what I imagined. I imagined I would, you know, once again, I want to get the information, I want to fix myself and cover it. Got good, good. So I worked with Heather for about 5 years. And she started encouraging me to get an in-town sponsor. And I didn't know who that would be. And what happened was a lady that was moving here had contacted our local central office and asked to be connected with a sober woman. She said, I've been sober a while, but I don't want to move to a new area and not know anybody. That's rough. I want to be connected at some level. And so I started emailing with Patty, who is moving up here in about 6 months, and we developed this online friendship that was just really exciting. It was wonderful to get to know somebody and share about my program and have all these email exchanges. And so then she was like, gonna be here. And like, I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And she was coming to my home group meeting and all of this. And I'm thinking, well, I wonder what she looks like and all, you know, because I didn't have a picture or a visual. And, you know, and so I walk into my home group meeting and I look over there and I go, Oh, shit, that's got to be her. And she's gorgeous, and she's slim, and she's stylish, and she looks rich, and I fucking hate her. Right? Because now my eyes are telling me something that I don't fit in with her, and I get all, like, I'm just totally conflicted, because I know her, and I think my higher power is so amazing because of that way that I got to know her. My defenses were down enough that I could learn from her, that I could be her friend, that I could. And after, I don't know, probably 3-4 months, I asked her to sponsor me. I wanted what she had. She was comfortable with herself. She was right-sized. She wasn't trying to puff herself up to look better. She wasn't trying to be small so that she fit in. She was comfortable. And I'm like, wow, that's powerful. And I begin to walk through the steps again. That just gave me a new level of transformation that I didn't know was possible. And when we finished those steps, we started looking at the steps as they applied to money, property, and prestige. Because guess who has trouble with that too? And I am so thankful for her influence on my life and getting me through some really tough times. Because sober or not, life comes. And life is not a bed of roses. It's a beautiful experience, but it's up and down. It's, you know, a mixed bag. So thank God for Patty. And when Patty moved to the coast, I was ready to move with her. I was just like, okay. I always wanted to live over there where it's nice and cool anyway. We're at, you know, 600 degrees here in the valley. There's no ocean breeze. And I didn't want to lose that connection. I didn't know how it could be replaced because I'd grown very close to her. I felt like, even though I'd done all this work, like she was the first person that really got me. She saw me. And that's a powerful experience. So by this time, I had married the love of my life, man of my dreams. And Alan didn't want to move to the coast. He said, we don't have jobs over there. Okay, you're not the man of my dreams anymore. The man of my dreams goes where I want to go. You know, we're gonna go over there. And he humored me a little, you know. And eventually I came to see it wasn't a feasible, you know, choice for us. And so I started, you know, working by phone again with that sponsor. And I am so thankful that I've been willing to continue sharing my life at that sponsorship level with someone, because I start keeping secrets right away and I don't want to tell people how I feel unless it's admirable. And I need someone that can see me, that I don't have to hold up that face that makes me look like I think you think I should look, or like I think I want you to see me look, or, you know, however that is. Continuing to have a connection like that with another human being has been, I don't know, like the growth for my sobriety. And also continuing to have a sponsor that points me to the work of the book. I didn't need a bunch of psychobabble. I needed to get into these steps and apply them to my life. That's what I needed. And I've had sponsors who have known how to do that, have been armed with the facts about themselves, and are able to help me see truth about myself. So pretty soon Patty was telling me I needed an in-town sponsor. I guess I don't come across well on the phone. I don't know. So I've had a couple sponsors since then. I continue to avail myself of that resource. And each one of them has brought something wonderful to my life, a new perspective, just the ability to not be alone with my own thoughts. So I seemed to get these out of town sponsors, so a lady moved to Hamford and started coming to our Visalia meetings. And I identified with her, and I liked the sparkle and the light in her. And she'd been sober a long time, and I'd been looking for someone who was involved in the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started working the steps with her, and it has been an amazing and revealing process. And what happened for me was this year, this incident happened where I was buying some fruit at a fruit stand alongside the road, and there's a bag of apples there for $3, you know. And I take that bag of apples and I put my money in the bag, and then I say, I wonder if these apples are really good. And so I take an apple to sample, not out of my bag. And and then this starts gnawing at me, and I am uncomfortable. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I've been sober a long time, and I'm stealing an apple from a farmer. This is not okay. And what happened was that this started representing a lot of levels of my personality that are about step 6 and 7. It's this thing that I don't have enough, I'm not going to get enough, how am I going to take care of that? And it's just, you know, we talk about, sometimes you'll hear the example of an onion and how we come through these different layers. And this example that I'm sharing with you about this apple, it just helped me see my relationships with other people, a lot with my family. It's given me a greater need for my higher power, because these little things that eat away at who I want to be and how I believe and want to live, continue to, I think, submit to the steps. And that when I continue to apply these steps to areas of my life that aren't working, they start working a little bit. And when I apply them to areas that are working, they get, you know, like machined or get supercharged, or I don't know what they get, but it improves my life. I feel very fortunate that Alan and I share the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It gives us a basis to own our own stuff and to work through challenges that come up in any relationship. So I'm very blessed to be sober. I'm honored to be asked to speak. If I'd spent more time telling you funny stories about my drinking, I probably would have talked longer, and I really don't know how long I've been talking, but I think that's just about right. So thank you so much.